Hi, Hillary.
Hi, Steven.
Exciting times in 2019.
Really exciting times, and really excited to see what 2020 has in store for us.
So, what are the biggest things of 2019 in the podcast space?
Well, I think we could break it down, maybe start back in January and talk through what kicked off the year with some of the big transitions and kind of roll from there.
There were a few acquisitions.
Just a couple.
A few of them fairly significant. And we won't even talk about the Performance Bridge acquisition in 2018 by Veritone, which was probably the single biggest defining event in podcast history.
Might have kicked all of this 2019.
Yes, actually, I think it was. Everybody was afraid of being late to the party. You know, certainly, I think, you know, from my perspective, the biggest thing that we saw in 2019 was, you know, the M&A activity and mass media really kind of jumping in. You know, certainly a lot of radio networks that historically had dabbled a little bit finally made some commitments.
And really sizable commitments too. I think that was kind of one of the big takeaways this year, was just the volume of activity going on in that space and then what dollar values were being thrown around too.
Yeah. And it's different when you have, you know, when you get an iHeart or when you get somebody, you know, the true titans of the industry making those level of commitments, apart from the money and apart from the financial, what it provided to both the networks that made the acquisition, but to the podcast groups that were acquired, like the legitimacy that it added. You know, it was all of a sudden that, like, you know, hey, iHeart buys How Stuff Works. How Stuff Works is a great, great network that's produced a lot of really, really great content for a number of years. We've been lucky that we've both had a relationship with them for many years. Yeah. To see somebody like iHeart come in and say, hey, this is an area that we've been dabbling in. We haven't had maybe the level of success that we had hoped for, or it's not happening as quickly as it was. You know, let's find somebody who has a lot of experience here and let's make a commitment to them and let's let them help us power forward here is really interesting. And I think it, you know, as you said, it kind of kicked everything off in terms of, okay, they made their move. Now what are other people going to do? And then what? 3 months later? 2 months later?
Just about, yeah.
Spotify comes out and says, gee, not only are we going to buy a content producer, but we're going to buy a technology producer too. So obviously buying somebody like Gimlet, pretty big deal. For all the things that Spotify does great, and it's a lot of it, they hadn't produced a whole lot of spoken word content. They've done a few podcasts.
A handful here and there, but I think, you know, one big thing post the Gimlet acquisition is that looking at their slate of shows that they have on the docket for 2020 from their originals, it's absolutely nothing comparable to what they had done before.
Yep. Not only were they acquiring an established set of content, they were acquiring a team of producers, a team of content builders, a team, you know, like all of these different things. So that's fascinating. And so you see iHeart make a move, you see Spotify make a move. And then a couple of months later, Entercom decides to acquire the portion of Cadence that they didn't own. And at the same time, in buying Cadence, also buys what many perceived as maybe the second largest true podcast content producer in Pineapple, to be able to sit there and say, you know, Cadence, as big of a rep network as there is out there, representing tons and tons of shows, tons of relationships.
Yeah.
So it gives Entercom that entrance into podcasting. And then again, the Pineapple thing. So being able to say, gee, we now have content producer and a whole bunch of experience.
You know, and I think knowing the big moves that have happened from a network level, industry-wide, I think we're seeing similar developments on the audience side of things in terms of who's listening, how are they listening, how are they discovering new shows, what kind of content's coming out. I think there's been some really, really great developments and moves in the positive direction in 2019 across all of those trends as well.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, what we're seeing, and there's obviously some reasons why these mass media companies are making the commitment now. The metrics for audience, both in terms of individual show size and what people are seeing on individual shows, the growth of those audiences, but overall, as you know, the industry evolves and as more and more people are finding about it, and when you look at Edison and you know you look at any of their stats, you know, More people are listening to podcasts every year. They're listening to more podcasts. They're listening to podcasts longer. I think those are the areas where certainly the mass media guys are taking a look at it and saying, oh, gee, it's now time. It's hit the point where we can now make an investment in this and have it pay off financially for us.
Yeah. And in 2019, too, that's when they coined the term super listeners. That was a whole study that came out earlier this year that was identifying that not only are people listening to a lot, like it's all the things we knew. Now it's been validated, right? That podcast listeners are listening to multiple shows or listening longer. They do have, you know, a long attention span for shows that are of multiple lengths and all of that. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of validation of who's listening, and then also diversification in the space too. There's new people coming in, and I think the mass media approach is helping with that because they're promoting podcasts outside of podcasts.
Yes.
They're promoting podcasts on the radio now. And so now you're attracting listeners that are coming into the podcast ecosystem for the first time, and they're getting hooked.
Yep.
And then now our base of podcast super listeners is growing.
Yep. So you see things like a Will Ferrell who launches, you know, Ron Burgundy who launched his show this year. The level of promotion that they could do behind that allowed that show to grow to such a significant number of listeners in a very, very short period of time. Yeah, a lot of it is because of Will Ferrell. I mean, let's not discount that. But the ability of content producers to be able to promote that and to reach the people who aren't the historical podcast listeners is really pretty powerful.
Yeah. And there's even been some overlap this year too, where we've had large, you know, podcast hosts moving into mass media channels where they're now, they were so successful with their podcast, they were granted a radio show this year.
Yeah.
And so now they're able to cross promote both platforms to new audiences and kind of continue to grow their base.
One of the things specific to our industry is kind of the change in the way ad technology has happened this year too,
yeah.
Which in my mind is one of the biggest changes. Certainly as, again, and this goes back to the other, you know, the previous, it's really kind of the one overarching theme is the industry is really taking off as an ad-supported mechanism, both for consumers and for those that are either producing the content or supporting it through advertising. And that this year it felt kind of like we're closing in on that critical mass point where it's now taken seriously. It's now considered as a channel that most advertisers can use. It's considered by consumers a channel that they listen to and is part of their listening routine. Like it's this kind of whole idea that podcasting is adopted in a variety of different ways now.
Yeah. I think we've been calling it this year that podcasting's gone from emerging to emerged.
Yeah.
You know, it's no longer niche. It's mainstream in a way. I think we've hit that critical mass and level of sophistication in terms of the ad tech side where it is broad reaching.
Yeah, and you know, and as we see kind of this evolve, that the days of relying on log files from RSS feeds, not sustainable, probably not terribly accurate in many in many ways. We for many years have had to do things in a very manual, time consuming process that it's now getting to a point where a lot of these things can be, I don't want to say automated, but they're significantly easier to get, significantly easier to understand. Apples to apples is a great way, you know, is a great comparison, right? You know, when we're looking at downloads and when we're looking at things like whether it be the IAB compliance, yep, and these types of things. So
now I've moved on to IAB certified.
IAB certified, yes.
Multiple levels.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think what personally I've seen, just this level of commitment from technology providers, from companies that are investing in the space and technology. You know, for many, many years, there was one or two ad serving platforms that you could get your numbers from and you could run ads through them, podcasting. And now there's a number of them, and you know, that space continues to evolve. Certainly rankings and measurement type things like PodTrac or being able to identify not only ways to count ad impressions and to be able to count what's actually happening, but to be able to look at other things like tying in a number of companies that are tying in demographic information,
yep,
or tying in,
yep,
all sorts of different information with these to give us a better thing. This year has been really pretty remarkable in kind of that evolution.
Yeah, I think the added layers that we're now able to tap into with psychographic targeting, demographic targeting, like you just mentioned, and then even the geographic targeting, I think that's opening up the door for some advertisers that maybe couldn't advertise in podcasts nationally before. And now we're able to come in and really hone in on specific markets, which is just another really strong opportunity and something that wasn't always there before. Also, not only do we have the psychographic, demographic, and geographic, there's now even the opportunity to come in and target contextually as well, which I think is going to be a really, really big thing moving into 2020.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that you can now target ads in a similar way to Google does with AdWords. but to be able to identify keywords or themes in programming and being able to dynamically serve ads based on thematic content. So it's no longer the days of, oh gee, this show is about X, let's run these advertisers in it. Now you can run in a show that's about Y, but it can be completely contextually relevant based on what the topic of that show is for that particular week. Like, you don't need specific targeting at a super high level. You can now do it at a level that we couldn't. So I think that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
So international growth, certainly a big deal. And, you know, as we're seeing, again, it's this adoption of podcast listeners, where listeners are in ad-supported mediums. Typically, the money follows.
Yeah. And I don't think it's to say that international podcast listening is a new thing by any means. I just think the monetization of the international marketplace is something we're seeing grow this year, and I think will definitely be something that will grow in the years to come as well. A couple big things stood out to me this year. One was the release of big blockbuster US shows in foreign language. That was kind of a first there. And then also there's been a couple really big investments of US-based technology companies in the international podcast marketplace. I believe Art19 just made a big acquisition in South Korea, which is, you know, when you're looking at the level of podcast listenership, South Korea ranks really highly on those charts, but historically has not really been monetized. So that's definitely a place where I think we're going to see a lot of growth in the years to come as well.
Yeah, and certainly as we see, you know, a number of the European podcast companies making more inroads every year into the U.S.
Yeah.
And kind of building these umbrella organizations that are able to cover both international and U.S. markets. And, you know, as they build those out, what the biggest change in my mind is the fact is we could always reach international audiences. The international audiences that we can reach now continue to, you know, have kind of evolved into a sizable enough audience that we could, you know, for whatever reason, with the exception of South Korea and a few other countries, there were only a few countries that really significant inroads in listeners were made, you know, with the U.S. leading that charge. But now seeing new numbers out of the UK and new numbers out of continental Europe and certainly the Far East, you know, that's definitely changed kind of the dynamics of it. So yeah, interesting to watch. And, you know, as we're seeing across the entire industry, assumption is that that'll probably continue to 2020 and significantly longer after.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the big thing, you know, from a content perspective that we saw in 2019 was the emergence and really rapid growth and adoption of daily programming. I think obviously The Daily led the charge there. There's no question about that. But then there's been adoption across a variety of other genres as well.
So in thinking about it, I'm wondering if it's, again, this mass medium.
Maybe.
Getting the mass media, you know, coming into it and kind of having the ability to test some different things. So when you see a New York Times, who isn't completely and solely relying on their podcast revenue, at least I hope not for their sake, to be able to say, you know what, we're going to make a commitment to a daily show. There's going to be some production costs associated with it. This is not going to be an insignificant commitment to us. And you know what, we're okay investing in that and seeing how this goes and seeing them have some success. And then you see other companies saying, oh, gee, you know, not only are we going to buy a whole bunch of content producers out there, but let's start producing our own content and being able to make those levels of commitment that podcast only guys probably couldn't make for a long period of time. So when you have people like, you know, ESPN coming out with a new daily podcast, and, you know, it's a combination of both being the mass media guy who has the ability to produce and has all of the content to do it. Like, yeah, there are a lot of people who could produce daily content and have absolutely nothing to say every day.
Oh, yeah.
ESPN has a decent stable of employees who are doing nothing but finding new information that they can pass on through different channels. So I think that those are, you know, a number of layers there, but certainly daily. So you have the content, you know, a lot more real-time stuff. So you get things like the impeachment stuff. Like, yeah, there's four, you know, there's 40 impeachment podcasts at this point that are daily tracking the impeachment process. Like, those are things that you wouldn't have found a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Same thing with, like, Jeffrey Epstein, right? When that whole,
yep,
that whole thing blew up, that there was immediately 5 podcasts that popped up. And I think that actually really speaks to the nature of podcast content and the fact that people are tuning in because they want a way to understand the world around them. And there's podcast content suited to those needs, right? They anything that's happening out there, maybe that needs to be digested in a more intimate fashion, podcasting is really filling that void. The content creators are following suit with what topics need to be discussed.
And I think it's really interesting, and kind of, you know, to that point, it's interesting that what you see is you're getting deeper dives into particular areas that mass media may not be able to support, either from a production standpoint, from a cost standpoint in producing this content. So in what I mean by that is that if you're a 24-hour news network, you'll run the same story over a period of time, or you'll have some talking heads on there that talk and yell back and forth at each other about a particular topic. And that's expensive to do. Like, you've got, you know, you've got to produce that content, you got to pay a whole bunch of people or whatever. When you're doing a podcast, you can actually go into more detail and into more depth and not worry about losing some of the listeners, because you've got people who are actually selecting this podcast to hear about this specific topic. So you can do these deeper dives and be more informative and be more engaged to those people that want to hear it without worrying about whether or not you're reaching 4 million people for that 4-minute segment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not only those deep dives and topics we've seen a lot of this year, I think we've also seen a lot more scripted content this year, more so than ever before. And I think that medium's kind of finally coming into its own. In the beginning, I feel like it was a little more theatrical in nature, mm-hmm. and now the scripted content shows are definitely becoming more mainstream and are really bringing in big names, big celebrity names, to be a part of it as well.
And you have a lot more people testing and trying different things.
Yeah.
So that's, again, how everybody, you know, kind of is learning as we're going. Personally, the thing that I see the most is just there are so many new shows coming out every day.
So many.
We're in a unique situation where we get to see a lot of the shows that there are significant commitments from a production standpoint and from those types of things that are looking to be underwritten by advertisers. So we have a unique situation that we get to see those really regularly. And you and I have talked about this before. That volume has amped up considerably over the last year, and even more so over the last few months, I would say. Yeah. That's fascinating. And that doesn't even include the number of people that we're tracking through various platforms that don't have that underwriting and that don't have the significant production that are launching their own shows and that are independent guys and that are, you know, so the tens of thousands of shows that have launched probably over the last few months, like it's amazing to watch the amount of new shows that are launching regularly, and a lot of them really, really good stuff. Again, like, people have a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge seeing what people like and don't like, and they're really using that well.
Yeah. We didn't talk about big shows going behind paywalls this year.
Yeah. So when we talk paywalls, it's this question of, you know, there are ad-supported shows that become subscription-based. We have the Netflix thing. So you're now going to pay to avoid ads. Is that long-term, this thing? Probably. I mean, like, there will be a significant, just like Netflix,
I mean,
there'll be a lot of people that will get premium content, ad-free, that they will pay a fee for, and somebody will produce a lot of really, really good content. And it may be Spotify.
Yeah.
It may be Apple. It may be Cadence 13 and Enter. Like, I don't know who it will be at this
Slate
point.
Slate has their Slate Premium. Wondery has Stitcher has it.
Yep.
I think it's something we're seeing more and more of. It's not new. I wouldn't say it's new from this year. I just think we're seeing a little bit more movement in that space than before.
Well, certainly more investment.
Yeah.
And certainly more chances taken. I think everybody realizes that there will be some subscription-based spoken word premium audio content that people are paying for.
And it very well might be Spotify.
It very well might be Spotify. And they probably have a good head start to it. And the question is whether they charge separately for that or if that's just rolled into your music premium package and they look at, you know, retention improving significantly, so it's well worth the investment for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those are, you know, be it Illuminary.
They did get Guy Raz. He's my favorite.
Well, you know, they have some really, really great content. They took some behind the paywall. They've done a lot of things. I think what they've really been unique in is creating offshoots of established content. So you're not losing something that you perceived was free. And now they're moving it behind the paywall. They're doing offshoots of a whole bunch of shows to bring behind the paywall. So I think that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity. And then you're not even talking about Himalaya and the others that have talked about, you know, committing a bunch of money to content that will be subscription based. So yeah, I think that is, as you said, like there have been a lot of moves in that area over the last year. Probably till you find a Netflix type player in there, probably a few years up.
Fair.
But yeah, no, I think the morning drive, the afternoon drive, that type of content, I think is going to continue to kind of evolve. And
they're especially taking, like, the radio playbook.
Especially for you Southern Californians that are in the car all the time.
Yeah, we live in our cars.
So I guess we've identified a few key things that happened in 2019. You know, I think as we let off, the big one being the M&A activity.
Yep.
And some of the other things that have evolved over the year, including audiences and technology and other things, but with M&A really being the big one. What are you looking forward to next year?
I'm looking forward to some developments with discoverability. I think that's a space where we definitely can see some growth next year.
And in discoverability, you mean surfacing shows to people so that people can find the shows that they really would like to listen to?
Yeah, that, and also increasing the footprint of the podcast ecosystem at large, of who's listening. You know, I think we've identified that the people who are listening get hooked. So let's just continue to build that footprint. And then also, once they're in, how do they continue to find more like programming that they would be interested in? I think right now the most common way people hear about podcasts is still word of mouth or through another podcast. Yep. So kind of just working through that.
Yeah, you know, I unfortunately, I'm not sure if that's going to be something solved in 2020.
I'll still be here in 2021.
Yeah, no. But what I mean by that is I do agree with you. Like, that's like, that I think is the single most important thing for the industry. I think that it's going to be one of those things that we're going to evolve over time. And I just think about it, like my experience with TV. Like, I can tell you that 400 people have recommended different TV shows I should be watching right now. I have no idea, you know, like, so if we can't figure that with TV that has a significantly smaller set of shows, I'm concerned for podcasting in that. That being said, the vast choices that are there, there's some times where I'm kind of glad that people aren't pushing me to things that I like, that I literally stumble across things.
You just don't have time for it. Yeah.
So I hope that discovery improves. And I know that there are a lot of people working on it, and, you know, whether it be some of the aggregators or some of the, you know, however that rolls out, I think it'll be fascinating to watch 2020. I think that you'll continue to see some M&A activity. I think that a lot of the large, certainly the content providers, a lot of the big ones were purchased last year. So I'm not sure. There are obviously a bunch more and a bunch of really good ones too.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure any of the scale that have happened already. But yeah, so I think that there's, you know, I think that M&A will continue. And, you know, to your point, I think it's absolutely about, you know, the continued growth and the continued acceptance of podcasting by, you know, mainstream consumers as a viable entertainment channel.
Yeah. I think we have our work cut out for ourselves next year.
All right. So what is going to be your first binge listen in 2020?
I just got started on Crime Junkie today and I have a lot of catalog to catch up on. So maybe that.
Good. I was afraid that you were going to ask me what I was going to do, and I have, my queue is way too long to make that determination.
You can't pick one show, you have to pick one show. I have a lot of shows to catch up on.
You know, well, actually, the one thing that I really actually haven't done is I have not listened to the most recent, bringing up Startup again.
Yeah.
I have not listened to the most recent one.
It's worth a listen, that's for sure.
So I definitely have to listen to that. It's just, and this is a great thing about podcasting, right? Like, they stopped producing Startup on a regular cadence, so I unsubscribed from it. And this goes to your discoverability thing. I don't want to say I forgot about it, because obviously it's a fairly significant one for the industry, and, you know, but I just never resubscribed. I have so many shows in Overcast that I don't even bother to, I don't really add new shows at this point unless somebody specifically forces me to. But there's a great example of something that I have to go back to and listen to. So there's just so much good content out there. It's really, really tough.
Yeah, there really is. All right.
All right.